Rise and Shine, everyone. How's it going? This is Amy, and I am here for Amy's Kids Show. We're going to keep on celebrating freedom, folks, because do you hear those chickens in the background? Boy, they are celebrating freedom, aren't they? I'm celebrating freedom this morning. Most creatures wake up in the morning celebrating freedom. Freedom. Freedom to do what we want and think what we want and ask questions, be curious, wear what we want to wear, go where we want to go, talk to who we want to talk to about whatever we want to talk about. Boy, that's freedom. And we are celebrating freedom today. In fact, you know, children are not the only ones who think about freedom, you might be interested to know. I was talking with some grown-ups the other day, and one of them asked, what's another word for freedom? Well, it turns out there is no other word for freedom. Isn't that great? There is only one word. There is no other word that describes freedom. So we're going to be thinking really hard today about freedom, and we're going to be traveling again all the way around the planet to Soviet Russia, where we were last week. Does anyone remember? Well, last week when I came in the show, I brought this new book that I have. It's called The Genius Under the Table, Growing Up Behind the Iron Curtain. And we read the first 9 chapters from this awesome book by Eugene Yelchin about his life when he was growing up in Soviet Russia. Now, when he was growing up there, his name was Yevgeny, and he was a young boy, and he actually, we're going to find out today how he came to be under the table, but it turns out he is the genius that this book is about, and he is the genius under the table, and he lives in Soviet Russia. Well, what's going on behind the Iron Curtain in Soviet Russia that we are curious about today? Well, nothing more important than the struggle for freedom. The struggle for freedom, which is happening everywhere, all the time. It's happening here, right now, in our country. It's happening all over the world, all the time. So we could learn a lot from hearing this wonderful story about Yevgeny, his mother and his father and his brother Victor. They all live together in this komulka, which is an apartment where they live with a bunch of other people. And they even have a spy living with them. Yeah, we're going to hear all about that. We're going to keep reading because after I read the first 9 chapters, I met 2 listeners and they both told me, well, you're going to keep reading that story, aren't you? I guess I left it on a bit of a cliffhanger last time. So I guess I'm going to keep reading it, which is my pleasure because it's a wonderful book. Thank you for joining me for our celebration. Let's get started. Talking freedom.
One thing that I think is unique about me is that I love so many things. I love people, and I love the earth, and I love animals.
What I feel is unique about me is my ability to swim.
Something that's really special and important to me is my friends, and I have a lot of really close friends, and that's just really important. It's nice to know that someone's there for you.
I like the color.
What I think is special about me is that I'm very caring for people, and, you know, if someone fell down, I'm the first person there to comfort them.
I'm good with my hands, and I can make different things in sculptures, and I create little things that don't really even make sense, but they make sense to me. And that's one thing that's sort of unique about me.
I like to go my own way, and I don't care what other people think about me if I don't dress the way they do or act the way they do, and I just like to go my own way.
What I think is unique about myself is what country I come from. I come from Egypt.
What I think is special about myself is my background, because I'm part Indian.
My dad's from Venezuela, which is in South America, and my mom is from Turkey.
I'm Filipino.
My mother's Swedish and my father's Norwegian.
I'm actually from a lot of different backgrounds, which I don't know all of them.
Mama, Papa, listen up. I don't mean to interrupt, but there are things that I must know and places I must. Got questions by the ton, let me ask them one by one. Why is the sky so blue? And why do I look like you? How come only cats meow? Who, what, when, where, why, and how? Who, what, when, where, why, and how? Who, what, when, where, why, and how? Who, what, when, Papa, listen up. I don't mean to interrupt, but there are things that I must know and places I must go. Mama, Papa, please excuse me. All these things, they just confuse me. I've got questions by the ton. Let me ask them one by one. Where is the farthest star? And when can I drive a car?
Dreamy Volga flows, there's a lonely Russian rose gazing tenderly down upon her knee, where a baby's brown eyes glisten. Rock her by for you and me and a Russian lullaby.
Time to keep going with our story that we started last week. Last week, I began reading The Genius Under the Table, Growing Up Behind the Iron Curtain, written by Eugene Yelchin. And last week, I read the first 9 chapters. So today we are starting with chapter 10. And let's remember who we're talking about here. We're talking about the book's author, who was named Yevgeny. And he's growing up in Russia behind the Iron Curtain in a time when the Soviet government was in control and things were very restricted. There was not much freedom at all. Wow. I mean, people weren't even allowed to ask questions and certainly not to get any answers to their questions. They weren't allowed to wear what they wanted. They could only wear certain colors, right? They had no chewing gum. If you remember last week, some Americans showed up with brightly colored clothes and chewing gum, and it was quite startling and amazing for Yevgeny and his family to meet them there, you know, to see them there in Red Square. And then where we left off was Yevgeny had gone to the ballet where his mother works. His mother works for the ballet company, and she knows Baryshnikov, who is a famous ballet dancer. You may have heard his name before, because he has since defected or come to the United States to live, which is quite an amazing thing, because maybe he went to Canada. He went to either Canada or the United States, but he left Russia. And why did he leave Russia? Well, he wanted to get out from behind that Iron Curtain. See, normally, people were not allowed to come and go in and out of Russia at that time. The Iron Curtain kept people from leaving or coming. And so even if Yevgeny wanted to travel and see the world, he would not be allowed to do that unless he had a special talent that the government approved of. And then, if the government approved of your special talent and you were considered a special person, well, then you got to travel and have all the freedom that most of us, take for granted. So that is why we're reading this story, so we can learn more about freedom by learning about a place where it is really restricted, when it was really restricted. And we're going to keep going with this story starting now. Here we go. Chapter 10. Have I ever told you about the first time I saw Misha? Mom said to me on the way home from the Kirov. She had about a million times, but I did not want to interrupt her because she was already telling me again. He came from Riga to audition for us at the Yaganovka. Thousands of hopefuls audition each year, but only a handful is accepted. Make no mistake, Yevgeny, it is the fiercest of competitions. She stopped, looked me up and down, sighed, and went on. That memorable day, we were in the exam room, all quite exhausted, having tested boys and girls since the morning, when in walks Misha. Mom lifted her chin and walked ahead of me, pretending to be young Baryshnikov, entering the room. His general appearance was striking. Noble carriage, capable legs, expressive and dignified manner. In a word, Misha was astonishing. Mom smiled at her memory, looked back at me, and her smile went away. "Don't slouch, Yevgeny," she said. "Stand up straight." Chapter 11. When we got home, Dad was already moving the furniture. Our room was so small that every night Dad had to move all the furniture out of the way in order to unfold our beds. He swapped things around as if he were shoveling a jigsaw pieces to a puzzle together in a picture. I loved pictures, but I hated puzzles. The puzzle pieces were made in a particular shape on purpose so they could fit in only one way only. But what if you did not like the picture they formed and wanted to change it? You were not allowed. No matter how much Dad shuffled the furniture, Grandma's dining table took up most of our room. The table was as large and old as Russia herself. Dad wanted to replace Grandma's table with a smaller one, but Mom would not allow it. Grandma was old, but she was younger than the table. Mom said that having that table kept Grandma going on account of not being the oldest in the room. Victor usually helped Dad solve the furniture puzzle, but when he was late from his figure skating drills, I would help Dad instead. I volunteered to help with the furniture out of guilt. I knew I was a disappointment to my father. Dad had expected me to follow in my brother's footsteps and be a great athlete. He tried me in every sport, chess included, but I failed in each. Dad had never complained, but I could see it there in him. Dad was a little strange, two people at once. Most of the time, he was a tight-lipped communist with the Cold War on his mind. But when it came to Russian poetry, Dad was a different person. One wall of our tiny room was lined with shelves stacked with poetry books. Dad read those books so many times, he knew each rhyme by heart. Ask him to recite a poem, and Dad was pure fire. He put so much feeling into the rhymes, shouting and whispering and flailing his arms, that watching him was beautiful and weird. The night after I saw Baryshnikov dance, Dad and I were shuffling the furniture around, and I asked him to recite a poem. Instantly, he burst into rhymes. I waited for a moment while he was gathering breath and said to him, "You may not be aware, Dad, but Mom is in love with Baryshnikov." He thought that was funny. "I tell you, Mom loves him more than..." I was about to say more than you, but I did not want to hurt Dad's feelings, so I said, "She loves him more than me." "Don't be ridiculous, Yevgeny. Mother loves you very much." "Why did she say, 'Oh, Misha,' and then start crying? We were at the Kirov watching Baryshnikov dance from the wings. You know what that is, the wings? And Mom said, 'I wish you were born with such artistic talent, Yevgeny.'" "So what?" "So what does it mean? I don't have any?" "Any what?" "Artistic talent, Dad." Dad's face was, as people say, an open book. He looked embarrassed. Even his hair, or what was left of it, stuck out in all directions as if each hair was trying to run away from my question. "You don't have to answer, Dad."
"No, no, no. I'm pleased that you're interested in artistic talent, Yevgeny, since your athletic talent is, well, we won't go into that."
He shook off his slippers and climbed onto Grandma's table. During the day, our sheets,
Blankets and pillows were piled high on top of the wardrobe. He reached up to grab a pillow when Mom's voice thundered from the kitchen. Dad froze, listening. Apparently, one of the tenants had cut in line to the only toilet, and Mom was using foul language to express what she thought of such rude behavior. "I hope it's not Blinoff she's yelling at," Dad said. Oh, and for listeners, in case you forgot, Blinoff is the spy that lives in their communalka with them. "Forget about Blinoff, Dad. Let's talk about Baryshnikov." Dad handed me the pillow and reached for the blanket. "Your mother admires Baryshnikov for his artistic talent, Yevgeny. And she said what she said because, well, because having talent is important in our country." "Why?" He stared at me from above as if he was weighing something. Something heavy. And was not sure I was old enough to hear the answer.
"Talent makes you free, Yevgeny," he finally said.
"Free?" I said. "Free to do what?"
"To live better life, to have the privacy of your own apartment, to own a car, to travel to foreign countries."
He handed me the blanket. "But, Dad, what about those Americans we saw in Moscow? Remember? One gave Victor chewing gum. They traveled to a foreign country, to our country."
"So what?"
"What do you mean, so what? If Americans are free to travel, does it mean they all have talent?" Right before my eyes, Dad transformed himself from a passionate lover of poetry to a tight-lipped communist.
"This conversation is over, Yevgeny. You're not old enough to discuss such matters."
The door flew open and banged against the edge of the table, shaking it so hard that Dad lost his balance. I thought he would crash to the floor, but he managed to catch the cast iron loop that held our ceiling fixture. He looked funny hanging there like a fish off a hook, but I knew not to laugh. Grandma squeezed in sideways.
"With all her French, my daughter has some mouth on her. You will not hear a mouth like that on me."
She looked at Dad, dangling from the ceiling.
"What's this, a circus? Your wife is yelling at that shtick-dreck Blinoff? You want to bring up children by yourself with circus tricks? Go fetch her."
She smiled at me.
"The street talk your mother is talking. I didn't teach her such talk. I want you to know, Yevgeny."
"I know, Grandma. What's a shtick? Dreck? A shtick dreck?
A shtick dreck," Grandma shrugged. "Let's say it's a poopy head in our language."
Chapter 12. Once our beds were fitted together, the only space left for me to sleep was under Grandma's table. I slept on a cot, a narrow strip of canvas fastened to a folding frame with metal springs. The springs stretched the canvas in all directions and turned my cot into a trampoline. If I wasn't careful, the cot would bounce me to the floor. By the age of 5, I learned to sleep without moving. Every night, I would climb under the covers. Dad would lift the tablecloth, slide my cot under the table, say, "Sweet dreams," and let the tablecloth fall behind me like a curtain at the end of a ballet. The tablecloth hanging to the floor on all sides turned the space under the table into a snug little tent. The glow from our stove flickered on the underside of the table, and the syrupy smell of pine from which the table was made tickled my nostrils. My little tent was as private could be, and yet I was not alone. My family was right there beside me. Dad said that if I had artistic talent, I could have a private apartment. But what did I need a private apartment for if I could sleep under Grandma's table? Chapter 13. At lights out, Dad's voice came from the direction of the bed that Mom and he shared.
"All right, people, who took my pencil?"
"He wants his pencil again?" Grandma said from her love seat. "What is it with this pencil night after night?"
Victor, whose bed was made up of three chairs roped together side by side to help him practice figure skating balance while he slept, said, "What do you need your pencil for, Dad?"
"I have a thought, if you must know. Need to write it down."
"Tomorrow you write it down," Grandma said.
"What if I forget it by tomorrow?"
"Wasn't much of a thought then," Mom said. "Lights out, citizens." The light clicked off, but it was not the time for me to sleep yet. I waited until my family settled into their dreams. Then I snuck a stubby pencil from under my pillow. I stole that pencil from Dad every night to draw on the underside of the table. The pine boards above me were covered with my drawings, like a ceiling of a prehistoric cave. I had plenty of room to draw on. The table was big. My drawings were small. You know how small because the pictures in this book are the ones I drew on the table. I do not mean that these are the exact same pictures. I am drawing them from memory. Yes, and listeners, I want you to know that this book is filled. Every page has drawings in it, pencil drawings that the author drew. So we can re-experience his childhood with him. I hope you get to see them someday. When you own as little as my family did, drawing on furniture is definitely a bad idea. I would have gotten in terrible trouble if my dad had found out, but I could not help it. Life seemed like an enormous puzzle to me then, and drawing helped order the pieces. Mom, Dad, Victor, Grandma, Lenin, the Americans, even Baryshnikov. Each piece was a different shape. I was a puzzle piece too, but I was made in such a wrong shape that I was convinced I would never fit in anywhere. The only place I fit in well was under Grandma's table, drawing to the soft squeak of the stolen pencil. Chapter 14. I was on my third drawing that night when Mom and Dad started whispering under the covers.
"I took Yevgeny to see Misha tonight."
"I know. He told me."
"Did he tell you how marvelous Misha was? His grand jeté from fifth position was spectacular."
"He said you love Baryshnikov more than him."
There was a long silence. Then Mom whispered,
"As if loving your children was enough in this country. How will he survive without talent?"
"I tried to explain it to him, but he's still so young."
"Being young has nothing to do with it. Victor was a regional champion at his age."
"Victor's super. No problem with Victor."
They were quiet for a while, probably thinking how super Victor was. Then Dad whispered,
"I'm really worried about Yevgeny."
"You're the only one worried?" Mom whispered. "I'm worried too, for your information."
"We can't expect miracles. So the boy has no talent. At least he is healthy."
"Healthy? I don't know. He's too skinny."
"He eats well, finishes everything on his plate."
"What's there to finish? How much do we have on our plates?"
Dad didn't say anything, probably feeling it was his fault that we did not have much on our plates.
"Without talent, he'll never have a decent life like some people," Mom whispered.
"Like Baryshnikov, you mean?"
"Yes, like Baryshnikov. Why do you think I dragged him to see Misha dance?"
"You're talking crazy, woman. Yevgeny, our next Baryshnikov, he can't play a game of chess without knocking over half the pieces."
"Who's talking chess? He has an artistic streak hidden somewhere. I can feel it. Maybe Vaganovka could bring it out of him."
I waited for them to go on whispering, but they were silent. Then Mom began to snore. The mattress creaked,
Dad must have turned to face the wall. Next, he was snoring too. I had always tried to make my pictures on Grandma's table look like the world as it appeared to me. But after listening to my parents whispering that night, I knew I drew a picture of the world as I wanted it to be. I drew Mom crying in the wings and looking in awe at someone tourjeteing from fifth position, only that someone was not Baryshnikov. Chapter 15.
What does drawing correctly teach us, children? Asked Zinaida Ivanovna one day at the start of art class. Drawing correctly teaches us to live by the rules. Discover the joy of living in our beloved country.
I raised my hand. What is it, Yelchin?
Can drawing help us discover if we have artistic talent? You don't have to worry about talent, Yelchin. Be quiet.
My classmates exploded with laughter. Zinaida Ivanovna smiled and went on.
The right way to learn drawing, children, is by drawing from nature.
Like trees, I said.
Are you trying to be funny, Yelchin? Even being a class clown requires talent. I'm sorry, but I don't hear anybody laughing.
Which was not true. My classmates were laughing.
To draw from nature, children, means drawing objects taken from real life. Like this beautiful cube, for example.
When my classmates saw a plaster cube on Zinaida Ivanovna's desk, they stopped laughing. The cube was dust-colored, chipped on one side, and depressing. What kind of nature that cube came from, I did not know, but I had to draw it like everyone else. Zinaida Ivanovna walked up and down the aisles, making helpful comments about what was not allowed. Pressing on our pencils too hard, turning our papers upside down, holding our erasers while drawing because our sweaty hands made the erasers dirty. I finished drawing my cube and looked around. Everyone was still working. Their pictures looked about the same. Instead of drawing from nature, they were copying Zinaida Ivanovna's cube that she had chalked on the blackboard. She had used the ruler to draw the edges. Everyone in class used theirs, too. My cube looked a little wobbly because I drew it freehand. I also placed it at the top of the page instead of at the center, as per Zinaida Ivanovna's rules. Empty space below the cube made me think of those pedestals that museums put their statues on. Oh, whoops, I'm sorry. I have to back up. I also placed the cube at the bottom of the page instead of at the center, as per Zinaida Ivanovna's rules. Empty space above the cube made me think of those pedestals that museums put their statues on. And I drew Mom standing on top of the cube with her feet turned out in first position. Zadik Berdyak, who sat behind me, yanked the drawing from under my pencil and passed it around. My mother, standing on the cube, struck my classmates as funny. Then Zinaida Ivanovna got hold of my drawing.
Very nice, Yelchin. You simply excel at never following the rules. Who is that standing on the cube?
My mom.
My classmates fell off their seats now, shrieking, "My mom!" and choking from laughter. Yelchin was asking about artistic talent, children, remember?
She held up my drawing for everyone to see.
Judging by this disgusting caricature Yelchin drew of his poor mother, we can say with absolute certainty, children, that he has no talent whatsoever.
And she crumpled my mother into a paper ball, and the school bell began to ring. Chapter 16. Victor had always been the world's greatest athlete in training.
He excelled in every sport, soccer, arm wrestling, chess, you name it. But the reason he became a champion in figure skating was because my dad caught him risking his life on a pair of bootless skates. As soon as the streets turned icy, Victor used to hide in the archway of our apartment building, ready for action. Skates were secured to the soles of his shoes with wire and an iron hook, the kind butchers use to hang meat, was concealed under his coat. The moment an occasional truck rumbled by, Victor would dart out, slam the butcher's hook over the truck's wooden tailboard, and skate behind its rear at neck-breaking speed. I was convinced that sooner or later, my brother would kill himself, but I kept my promise not to tell Mom and Dad about his suicidal rides. One day, I was watching Victor from under the archway. I was not yet allowed to go out in the street by myself. I saw Victor dash after the passing garbage truck, and in the same instant noticed Dad crossing the street. The garbage truck cut him off, and Dad turned to yell at the driver and caught sight of my brother hooked to the truck's tailboard. Dad stood with his mouth open, watching his oldest son whisk around the corner by the skidding truck. I knew it was against the rules, but I could not help breaking them at such an important moment. I ran out into the street. "Are you all right, Dad?" It took him a moment to answer. "What are you doing in the street?" "I've never done it before, Dad. I'm sorry."
"And what about your brother? How long has this been going on?"
"He's never done it before either, Dad. I'm sure he's sorry, too." Just then, a different truck rumbled by, pulling Victor in the opposite direction. Dad's head snapped to follow my brother, leaping over the tracks of the streetcar like a rabbit ducking bullets. When Dad turned back to me, he was smiling. "Ha-ha, we'll try the hooligan in figure skating," he said. "He should do fine."
Chapter 17. Figure skating was one of our government's best weapons in the Cold War battles. No expense was spared on grooming talent, and when ready, our most talented young skaters were sent to international competitions to beat the Americans. In return, our champions were rewarded with private apartments, personal cars, and trips to foreign countries. In no time, my brother became an ace figure skater. Dad and I went to his competitions and even to some of his practice sessions. Mom, who did not care for sports, accepted figure skating because it was a kind of ice ballet set to music. Soon, Victor's coach decided that my brother was too good to skate by himself. From single skating, he was switched to pair skating. He was paired up with a girl named Irina. To twirl Irina over his head, Victor needed big muscles. Since Dad had no money for muscle-building equipment, my brother used me as his barbell. I was too light to be a barbell, but I was good at keeping still, straight, and quiet. Victor lifted me over his head and pumped me up and down in a series of 20. I was happy to be Victor's barbell. During those weightlifting mornings, my brother and I had our best conversations. A couple of weeks after I eavesdropped on my parents whispering at night, Victor was pumping me up and down from a standing position.
"Remember that one time when we saw Lenin's mummy in Moscow?" I said.
"Yeah."
"Lenin had a bandage under his beard. Did you know that? How could a mummy cut itself?"
"Shaving."
"Shaving? Isn't he dead?"
"He didn't shave himself, stupid. They had special people doing it."
I did not want to think about someone shaving a mummy, so I changed the subject. "Zinaida Ivanovna said I have no talent."
"Zinaida Ivanovna is a moron. What does she know? And it's not your fault, anyhow.
What's not my fault?
That you have no talent.
When Victor lifted me up again, my nose scraped ceiling plaster, and a speck fell in my eye.
"What's wrong, kid?" he said, dropping me down to his chest.
"Nothing."
"Nothing? You have tears in your eyes."
"It's not tears. It's a piece of plaster got into my eye."
Victor lowered me onto the edge of Grandma's table and gently flicked the plaster from my eye.
"It's easy for you," I said. "Mom and Dad think you're super. But try to be me for a day. I can't fit in anywhere without talent, even in our family."
"What are you talking about?"
"They don't love me."
"Who?"
"Mom and Dad."
"Don't be stupid. Of course they love you."
"No. I'm bad at sports, so Dad is always disappointed. And Mom loves Baryshnikov more. She took me to the Kirov to see him dance and..."
I told him what she said. "Know why she took you there?"
"I did not."
"Use your brains, kid. Mom wants you to be good at something. What you do is you say, 'Thanks for taking me to see Baryshnikov, Mom. I'm crazy about ballet now.'"
I loved my brother. He always knew how to give me hope.
"You think I can be a dancer?"
He laughed and slapped me on the back.
"Of course not. But you tell her you want to be like Baryshnikov and she'll love you to death. I guarantee it."
All right, folks. Well, that's where we're going to leave the book for today. And next week, I will carry on starting from chapter 18. We'll find out how this goes. We've been reading The Genius Under the Table, Growing Up Behind the Iron Curtain by Eugene Yelchin. And it's a story about Eugene Yelchin, who was named Yevgeny when he was a kid, growing up with his mother and father, his brother Victor, his grandma, and Blinov, the spy, who we're actually going to hear a little bit more about next week, because it's a very, very interesting place to be growing up. It's a very interesting time to be growing up, and I'm really glad that Eugene Yelchin wrote this book. We've been reading it for the past couple weeks last week and this week, and we're going to keep reading it because we are celebrating freedom. Freedom. What does it mean to be free? It sounds like when Yevgeny was growing up, in order to have any kind of freedom to do what you wanted to do, to live where you wanted to live, to have a car, to just travel, to travel and see places and wear what you wanted to wear, you had to have talent, some kind of talent that was approved by the government. And so what is a government? Children? I mean, I'm wondering if the kids out there know what is a government and why is this government over in Russia controlling the people so much? What is that all about? Well, governments kind of can set the rules that people live by. And they're sort of like parents, right? When you're young, your parents set the rules because they know more about the world and keeping you safe and keeping you healthy. And they want to teach you how to understand that stuff so you can do that for yourself someday. So someday when you grow up, you can rule yourself. That's called sovereignty. When you rule yourself, that means, you know, freedom doesn't mean just doing whatever you want, because of course we might hurt other people. We might hurt ourselves if we do whatever we feel like. But learning how to control our thoughts, understand our feelings, and then choose actions that get us where we want to be, that's true freedom. And that's what we're learning about on Amy's Kids Show. Thanks for joining me. Let's have some music.
We were rushing around in Russia, but we stopped to say hello. Доброе утро, good morning. Доброе утро, good morning. Then we were soon on the go. We were rushing around in Russia during the middle of the day. Добрый день, good afternoon. Добрый день, good afternoon. Then we hurried on our way. We were rushing around in Russia during a star-filled night. Dobrý večer, good evening. Dobrý večer, good evening. Then we were quickly out of sight.
Papa, listen up. I don't mean to interrupt, but there are things that I must know and places I must go. Mama, Papa, please excuse me. All these things, they just confuse me. I've got questions by the ton. Let me ask them one by one. Mm-hmm.
why I love you. Because God made the stars to shine. Because God made the ivy twine. Because God made the sky.
To the end of Amy's Kids Show for today. We've had a really fun episode celebrating freedom. Freedom to ask questions. Freedom to explore what your talent and special gifts are. So why we had some shout-outs to special gifts out there. You have special gifts. Of course you do. Everyone does. And Yevgeny has special talent, too. And he will discover it, don't worry. But I do wonder whether or not it's ballet dancing. I'm not sure. But it sounds like he's going to give that a try to please his mother. He really wants to make his mother happy, right? And that's a normal and natural thing. But it may not be following his own true talent. But he did have a few moments in private to ask his brother some questions about this. And that's so important. He also had a few moments in private to ask his father some questions. And that was nice that they had a chance to have those free exchanges. But they're very limited where Yevgeny is growing up. Those private moments, those opportunities to ask questions and then not always getting answers is part of it too. So we are celebrating freedom, the freedom to ask questions, the freedom to be ourselves and find out what our talents are. And of course, we need freedom to discover our talents. Maybe that's why in places like Soviet Russia behind the Iron Curtain, there were not very many talented people, or at least it didn't seem like it, right? Because people were not free to discover what their talent was and free to share their talent. So that's why it didn't seem like there was very much talent around, but I'm sure there was, right? Like Yevgeny's dad and his poetry, he clearly loves poetry. But, you know, he has to sort of separate that part of his life, you know, from the rest of his life. He's not allowed to live fully in his truth. And that's what we're all about here at Amy's Kid Show. We are living fully in our truth. We are learning to rule ourselves so that we don't need governments to step in and take care of us, right? If we can take care of our own thoughts, take care of our own feelings, and then choose actions that help improve our situations and help others. Boy, I'm going to be working on that this weekend. I'm not sure what you're going to be doing out there, but I will be back next week to read the next 9 chapters of The Genius Under the Table. Thank you for joining me for Amy's Kid Show for these couple of special editions these few weeks here. Y'all have a great time. We'll get together then.